guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I am very excited to introduce you to Tyler Jean from Functional Foods on Instagram. He's a naturopathic student studying medicine. And tell us a little bit more, Tyler.
I'm currently a third-year naturopathic medical student up here in Portland, Oregon, and excited to talk about all things dermatological health and skin health and holistic health, which is a lot of what we encompass in naturopathic medicine.
So I found you through Instagram because I'm very interested in food and health and wellness, and I really loved your post. So thanks so much for putting all that good content out there. For those of you guys who are interested in eating better and like eating the highest quality foods that are going to improve your overall wellness, you definitely should check him out. And it's functional.food Instagram. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. And tell me, why did you decide to become a naturopathic medical doctor versus a regular medical school route?
Yeah. So, I mean, my entire life I've been interested in the human body and was always on that stereotypical route of going pre-med, going into medical school. I was actually in a pre-medical fraternity and have about 30 other brothers that are currently in medical school, which is pretty cool. And I'm the only one that decided to go the unbeaten path and go into naturopathic medical school. But
where is your med school? What's the name of it?
The National University of Natural Medicine.
Oh, okay, cool. And that's in Oregon.
It's in Oregon, yeah. The one thing with naturopathic medical schools, there's only 7 schools to really choose from in terms of accredited schools. So it makes it a lot easier than having to apply to all these different schools for MD or DO. So pretty streamlined. But ultimately, my sophomore year of college, I was an athlete, really got into nutrition and how I could really fuel my performance and recovery, but just felt this gap and this disregard to nutrition in terms of the allopathic medical paradigm and a lot of it more focused on disease pathology and how we can either eliminate or suppress those symptoms, either through drugs or pharmaceuticals. While I think they all serve their time and place, it just wasn't something that truly resonated with me. And I was like, you know what? I want to get into something that I wholeheartedly believe in, and I've always kind of been more of that holistic perspective type person. So ultimately dabbled in research a little bit because my degree set me up well for that, but then was like, you know what? Research isn't for me. Got into clinical research, and I was like, yes, you know what? It's this clinical experience that really reminded me that I wanted to get into medicine, but just in a different field. And so when I found naturopathic medicine, I was like, this is exactly what I want to get into. And it really focused on addressing the root cause. It looks at a lot more lifestyle-based medicine. Again, how diet, lifestyle, exercise, stress reduction can all, you know, impact our quality of life and our health. And so for me, that was the route that I wanted to take. And got another, 2 years until I graduate now.
So you're halfway there. I am. And you recently passed some boards, I heard.
I did. I passed my equivalent to step one. So
Okay, really good. Excited about good that. Job. That's so hard. That was the hardest step for us. Like, you know, second year boards was really hard.
Yeah. So happy to be on the other side and now getting that clinical experience and clinical rotation. So
For those of you guys who are listening, I just want to give you a good visual. So Tyler, he went to school at UC Santa Barbara for undergrad, right? Looks like a very handsome surfer dude. Great eyebrows, good skin, very healthy, and very athletic, I'm assuming. You exercise a lot. What kind of athlete were you?
I was a swimmer.
I want to guess water polo. Yeah. see, there you go.
But I did dabble in water polo, too, as a common cross-training for swimming. So between swimming and water polo, but I ultimately did year-round swimming for 15 years. Yeah.
Wow. So you can consume any amount of calories and it doesn't affect
you. And that was the thing is, you know, when I was swimming, I really didn't have to focus on the quality of the food I was putting in my body. I was more focused on the calories aspect and making sure I was just eating enough. And so when it came to creating my page Functional Foods, which is a little over 3 years old now, it was focusing on the different aspects that food can provide and a lot more than just the nutrient density and the energy density, but how it impacts our gut microbiome, how it impacts all these enzymatic reactions that require micronutrients, your vitamins and minerals, how the food we eat can influence our epigenetic expression. So the activation or inactivation of our genes that we've inherited from our parents, which respond to, again, our diet, lifestyle, stress, sleep, you know, environmental toxins that we're exposed to, all of it. And so it's really taking that holistic perspective and looking at the whole person and not just treating those symptoms. And I felt like functional food was a great way of branding everything that food can offer.
That's very true. And then this aspect of medicine incorporates botany, using herbal medicine, using homeopathic things, hydrotherapy, physical therapy, like all of the ancillary things, which is, I think, more and more important as we learn more about different specialties. So a couple of quick questions I want to ask you. Do you believe in intermittent fasting? Because I've been doing that. I've been enjoying the results of that.
Yes, I do. And I've played around with different forms of fasting too. So there's intermittent fasting, which I think most people, maybe you can speak on your experiences, kind of typically 16 hours fasting, 8 hours of feeding. How do you do your fasting?
Yeah, pretty much try not to eat after 9 p.m. at night and then wake up, have some black coffee or black tea, and then just see a ton of patients. So I see intermittent fasting out of like being super, super busy, and it just ends up that I don't eat till about 2 or 3 p.m.
Okay.
So then I eat from 3 p.m. to 8 or 9 p.m., about 6 hours, I guess.
Do you find it easy?
And if I'm being good. Yeah, it's not so bad because once my day gets going, the black coffee is a little bit of an appetite suppressant. I at least have something warm in my tummy. I chew a piece of gum here and there. I hope that doesn't count as cheating. But
no calories.
But yeah, so, and it helps. And I think sometimes I'll still splurge and eat the wrong like pizza or whatever at night. But the calorie reduction overall is great.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Dr. Walter Longo's work. And he's out of the Longevity Institute at USC, which I believe is your alma mater.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And so. He has some great research regarding time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting, and prolonged fasting, as well as short-term fasting. So intermittent fasting is typically, you know, 16 hours of no eating. Let's say that's typical 16 hours of fasting, 8 hours of eating. Time-restricted eating is basically eating all the same amount of calories, but it's in a restricted window. So maybe you're still eating 2,400 calories in a day like you typically would, but you're only eating it between, let's say, 8 a.m. and 6 p.m., so between a 10-hour window. Everything else outside of there is fasting. And then some of these prolonged fasts where it's actually 3-plus days of water fast, and there's even been some considerable research coming out on the fasting mimicking diet, which he published, and that's a 5-day fast that is a lower caloric, low fat, actually it's a higher fat, low protein, low carbohydrate diet that has some more implications for biochemistry and reducing mTOR, trying to get into autophagy, and kind of like initiate some of that cellular regeneration and cellular healing. So it's pretty fascinating.
Well, tell our listeners about mTOR. What do they need to know to understand mTOR?
Yeah, so mTOR, people will say, is our master aging gene. So you talk about cellular aging, and it's going to cause cell proliferation, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but when that is activated and it's in overdrive, then that's going to cause more cell replication, more aging. And so it's this idea that we want to have it in balance. We don't want too much. We don't want too little. And when mTOR is inhibited, so it's turned off, and this is mTOR is going to be turned off or greatly lowered when we're in a state of fasting. And when we're fasting, we can actually turn on the set of genes that we are built in with and turn on these other enzymes, and one of these being autophagy, which is kind of this cellular regeneration. We can actually target specific cells that are aberrant or abnormal and kind of self-destruct. And so it's a built-in mechanism for cellular healing and clearing. And I think is one of the areas that fascinates a lot of people when it goes into time-restricted feeding, prolonged fasting, and fasting in general.
That's amazing. I was reading more about doing actual fasting for 2 or 3 days, and I'm getting more brave to the idea that I could probably handle that. So
what's the longest?
As you eat less, the longest is probably 24 hours, and, you know, just going to bed hungry because I'm exhausted, and then I'd rather sleep than eat, and then waking up realizing I survived fine and I actually feel even more. You know, they say women's brains process and think better when they're, you know, burning ketones versus like eating calories.
Well,
and I do feel that that's true.
Yeah, well, you're also using a lot of your brain is going through a lot of metabolic fuel, too, throughout the day, seeing so many patients, I'm sure. So you're kind of churning through all those resources a lot quicker as well.
That's true. As you fast more, your stomach shrinks a little. So you kind of are not as hungry. Smaller amounts fill you up, and then I've just tried to become really picky Monday to Friday with what I eat, and then splurge a little on the weekend. So trying to be 80-20 good.
There you go. You got to find that balance. But yeah, I've even found that it helps with blood sugar regulation too. And you get better control blood sugar, reduce cravings, better sleep. You're kind of get insulin under control too. So you're more able to tap into that body fat that a lot of people are trying to lose. And in studies that they've done with some of this, at least with the 5-day fasting mimicking diet, being able to reduce that amount of visceral fat, which is that deeper fat that cushions our internal organs, and can be more problemsome in terms of cardiovascular health and other metabolic dysfunction.
Now, are you a vegan or a gluten-free individual, or do you eat everything?
You know, it's funny you say that. I started my food account actually as a vegan. And I ate a standard American diet. I was an athlete, kind of just very processed carbohydrate centric, lots of meat, lots of sugar. I probably ate a pound of sour gummy candy every single week. I loved my sweets.
Wow.
Okay. I would say I still do have a sweet tooth in a way. It's just a lot more tamed, and you know, I can make my own desserts that are a lot more healthy for me and more nutrient dense. I started vegan as an athlete. It ultimately did not work out for me after, restricting animal-based products for 18 months. I got really depleted. I had lost about 12 pounds in that time. And I was overtrained. And so the catabolic nature of swimming, it's a high level of conditioning day in and day out. I simply couldn't keep up and my body couldn't recover. And, you know, there's all these micronutrients that people will talk about that you may be missing and that you need to be more cognizant of your protein consumption, because when you're vegan, the first thing someone will ask is, where do you get your protein from? But, you know, I was eating a whole food plant-based diet. I was meticulously supplementing with those various vitamins and minerals that may be more scarce. But ultimately, from this journey that I kind of went through and how I've transitioned my account to starting as a vegan food account, is this important aspect of balance and bioindividuality. So what works for me may not work for you, but I think that there's this foundational principle that we all need to center our diets around whole, unadulterated, real food. So food that we'd find from the land, whether that be fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, tubers, or even the animals that roam, you know, are the earth, versus a lot of these hyper palatable processed foods that come in packages that are microwavable, that are convenience food for us. And so, not to say that they don't serve a time and place and they can nourish our soul in different ways, but developing a relationship with food that is, again, like you talked about, the 80-20, where it's 80% you're eating more of those nutrient-dense foods that really nourish our body. They provide a lot of fiber, phytochemicals, vitamins and minerals, and then finding that balance of where you can incorporate some of those more fun foods, I would like to call them. So right now, it's I try to avoid gluten and dairy just because I've noticed that they're more problemsome for me, but I've really kind of let back on that and really tried to enjoy the experience that food provides, because I think there's a lot of aspect of community around food as well.
That's true. I think gluten and dairy do tend to slow you down. It's just a high fire fuel that tends to give a lot of inflammatory disease to the body, to the skin. It's so important, I think, to eat evolutionarily like our ancestors ate, and like within your heritage too. Like, I'm Indian, so like the turmeric, the spices, there's all these Indian things that are thousands of years of culture, have probably part of my DNA that I don't even know that I need. So as I got a little older, I start to eat more like that way too.
Awesome.
Evolutionarily and heritage based. Yes. But,
get back to the roots.
And then I'm also really interested in the idea of collagen supplementation. What are your thoughts on bone broth versus collagen powders? And skin and joints.
It's a hot topic right now. And, you know, I have tried collagen in the past, and I'm going to say it really worked. I am more of a fan, and I always kind of ask this question, frame this question, is how would our ancestors would have consumed these things? And typically, it would be in more of a bone broth. Like, before we'd be able to hydrolyze collagen and actually get it in these packets where we're taking it as a supplement, you know, bone broth is a rich source of collagen, but also gelatin that comes from cooking down the cartilaginous tissue of those bones that you're getting from either chicken or beef or lamb. There's a variety of sources, and it's going to also provide a lot of other micronutrients, so more bioavailable calcium and zinc. And but, you know, beyond the micronutrients too, you're also getting what is known as glycosaminoglycans. So you're getting stuff like hyaluronic acid, you're getting chondroitin sulfates, and some of these aspects to connective tissue, which a lot of people will say supports joint health or supports the gag layer in the gut, and again, the connective tissue and stuff like that. So I think it can be very therapeutic, very medicinal. I kind of view it as like a medicinal food. But it's also really rich in glycine. lysine and proline. So these are kind of precursors to collagen. And I also think when we talk about food, so like when it comes to collagen synthesis, everyone wants better collagen. They want more of that structure. They don't want that saggy, wrinkly skin. And they want youthful, glowing skin. And so with that, you're looking at collagen, which is that gives it more of that structure and integrity. And the enzyme that is responsible for kind of creating these collagen peptides is vitamin C dependent. And so also making sure to include a lot of vitamin C rich foods in the diet, and how the bioflavonoids in a lot of those vitamin C rich foods, whether it be from, you know, oranges or grapefruits or bell peppers, they actually support phase one liver detoxification too. And we can even talk about too on how liver health is also important too, and being able to excrete xenobiotics from the body so that we have this youthful glowing skin and it doesn't look kind of inflamed and lacklustrous.
Yeah, no dullness. So you think taking collagen every day and collagen precursors that are found in bone broth is a good way just to give your body the precursors to build more collagen.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of studies that support that collagen powders are super beneficial, but some of them say in the right concentration, if you take enough milligrams of precursors, they do spill over and are more bioavailable in the bloodstream, right?
Yeah. Well, I would even even step a little bit further too, and this is the naturopathic person in me where it's always like get to the underlying root cause. There's always more to the story, and it's kind of like peeling back those layers to the onion. If someone is getting benefits from collagen, great, but why, if they are having collagen being degraded at a more rapid rate, why is that?
Why is that?
That'd be a better question to ask, I think, too. You can still add collagen, but if you can remove whatever those other several factors are that are contributing.
That would be stress, sugar, glycolation of sugars. That would be like sun exposure, smoking, all the different toxins that are out there.
Yeah.
It would be great if there was a food that would build elastin. Elasticity of skin, I think, is going to be the next challenge. It's more so than collagen. Everybody talks about collagen. Let's talk about elastin and elasticity of skin.
And it doesn't renew kind of the way that the other connective tissue in our body does.
Right. Like the person who solves that problem is going to be a really wealthy person.
And I mean, this day and age, I mean, skin is in and it's always going to be in. And everyone is looking for that youthful glow, and you can use so many different tools. And in naturopathic medicine too, in integrative dermatology, a very hot thing is definitely Botox and hyaluronic acid fillers, but also how can you address the fundamentals with sleep, you know, all the different dietary hygiene, stress reduction, blood sugar control, all those different things.
Everything. Yeah. What do you think about the whole injectable field? Does it jive with being naturalistic in terms of medicine? And
I mean, I think it's ultimately got to meet the patient where you're at. And I think we can offer those services, and it's going to build a lot of confidence for a lot of people. But also educating on how to take care of your skin. I don't think you may want to, this is my opinion, putting in the investment of getting injectables and then kind of still trashing your body, because it's going to accelerate the rate at which that hyaluronic acid may be broken down, or even contribute to more advanced glycation end products, oxidative stress, which is going to cause more of that skin to age more rapidly.
That's very true. In our day and age, I think a lot of people, you know, they work hard, they party harder.
Yeah.
They are all about looking good and maintaining, but they need the liver detox. So what should they do for liver detox after their weekends of 20% indulgence?
I mean, there's a variety of nutrients that are used as cofactors. So they assist in what is called phase one and phase two liver detoxification. So your liver's role, a lot of people would refer to it as a car filter. It's not quite a filter, but what it does, it takes these, what we call xenobiotics. So different environmental factors, exposures, drugs, toxins, and it takes these more harmful reactive compounds. It makes them inert, or actually it turns them into what is a fat soluble compound into a water soluble compound. And when it's in that water-soluble phase, it's actually more reactive. So you actually have to convert it to an inert phase so that you can actually properly excrete it through your organs of excretion, which we call the homunctories. So that's stuff like your skin. Your skin is one of your largest organs of detoxification. So sweating, so important. Your liver, your spleen, your kidneys, and your whole lymphatic system. And so you want to make sure that you're getting those things out of the body, and that can also be through your poop, through your urine. You're sweating it out, you're huffing it out through your lungs. Those are also a homunctory. So making sure that you're eating a very nutrient-dense diet that provides all those cofactors to be able to properly excrete those environmental toxins that we're exposed to.
Are there certain foods that you will eat every day without fail that's just part of your recipe for good health? What are those?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really like broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts are tenfold more concentrated in sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is the active phytochemical in a lot of your brassica vegetables. Those are things like broccoli, cauliflower, kale, mustard greens, Brussels sprouts. Mm-hmm. And so that is actually a potent inducer of phase two detoxification. And it also regulates NRF2, which is a transcription factor that is involved with antioxidation and cellular health. So those are all things that I think are important to consider when it comes to foods. And so when you're looking at bang for your buck, those are definitely one. Blueberries, I think, is amazing, especially wild blueberries. They are great for brain health. You look at the mind recommendations for dementia and Alzheimer's, that those that consumed a lot more blueberries had lower incidence of dementia and Alzheimer's. I think that was a study back from 2015. But they're also a rich source of antioxidants too. So if we're talking about cellular aging and being in a pro-oxidant phase, those antioxidants kind of squelch and mop up those excessive free radicals and reactive oxygen species that can cause cellular damage and cellular aging. So blueberries, broccoli sprouts. I love ginger. It's warming. It's anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor.
Like in a drink, or you just eat it in your food?
I throw it in a smoothie. And my smoothie in the morning is kind of like all of my magic foods. And I just throw it into one blender and it kind of like covers my bases for the day.
Wait, so describe what you throw in your smoothie. Yeah. I want to have one of those tomorrow.
It's blueberries. And I'll do like a cup and a half of blueberries. I'll do half an avocado. An avocado, super great source of monounsaturated fats, and it also confers, in a way, UV protection from the sun without the use of sunscreen. So there's a number of factors that can actually contribute to your susceptibility to getting burned from the sun and actually sun-induced photoaging. But avocado, who knew, can be really beneficial for that. I throw kale in there, so again, more of those cruciferous vegetables. Also a rich source of lutein and zeaxanthin, which are dietary carotenoids that actually have an affinity for the macula in the back of the eye. So they kind of help protect the damage that we get from the blue light when we're always on our tablets, on our smartphones, on our computers. I also throw the ginger in there. It's heating. It kind of warms up that smoothie, gives it a bitter taste. Mm-hmm. I love to throw pumpkin seeds in there too. Real rich source of zinc, which is necessary for skin repair. Also great for the immune system. And it's also
like raw pumpkin. You throw in some cooked pumpkin or raw pumpkin?
So it's actually pumpkin seeds. So they're also referred to as pepitas. I'll buy those sprouted and I'll grind those up. And then I love to add a bunch of different, what I'll call functional powders. So this will be stuff like matcha, which is really rich in chlorophyll. Chlorophyll also, helping to, reduce photoaging from the sun and UV damage. And then that can also be stuff like all the chlorophyll. So matcha, spirulina, Crax-L chlorella, I'm going to throw all that in there too to get all that chlorophyll. I've been really into medicinal mushrooms. So lion's mane, which is really rich in nerve growth factor. So it enhances synaptogenesis, neurogenesis, and the formation of those new neuronal connections and the growth of new neurons. So a lot of people refer to those as a nootropic. So if you're really thinking about cognition, brain health, lion's mane, cordyceps, I really like too, all those different mushrooms. And I'll add cinnamon.
And this is still going to taste good.
It still tastes good. Yep. I actually just,
cinnamon.
I actually just posted the recipe to this on my feed yesterday. So you can even check it out there. It's all listed in the measurements and everything. So.
Okay, cool. And then you'll add something like what kind of milk product or liquid do you add?
I will do water, or I will do organic almond milk. Water works.
Okay.
Almond milk makes it a little bit more creamy. But really, if you're just trying to get the basis, pumpkin seeds, kale, avocado, blueberries, and then the optional ginger, and then those other action, you know, things like matcha and other functional powders.
Yeah. That sounds amazing. Yeah. Talk a little bit about mitochondria and how we can stimulate our cells' mitochondria to regenerate or live longer or improve our aging process.
Yeah. Do you talk about mitochondria a lot with your patients?
Not at all, but you know, I want to do that next level of hacking aging, and you know, even for myself, I'm starting to learn more. I read, I'm reading David Sinclair's book about you know prolonging longevity. So I'm interested.
Yeah, it's the whole anti-aging field is so interesting, and something that I definitely see myself getting into. A couple things that stand out. So fasting is one of those things. When we go periods of times of fasting, it actually stimulates mitochondrial biogenesis. So actually the formation of new mitochondria. Cold therapy. So this is kind of where hydrotherapy comes in. And one of these older tools that we use in naturopathic medicine. And I was actually over in Europe and Germany studying hydrotherapy this past month. Because it's one of these old forms of medicine. It seems so simple. Just water therapy and contrasting hot therapy with cold therapy. But that contrast therapy is really amazing. And, you know, getting into that really cold plunge after being in a hot sauna or being in the heat stimulates mitochondrial biogenesis. Same thing with sauna therapy. There's a lot of great research that Dr. Rhonda Patrick has presented on from Finland. And so the heat and the cold hormetic stresses on the body actually help stimulate mitochondrial biogenesis, the fasting. So it's all these different types of stressors on the body.
It's interesting. Yeah. Like when you go into survival mode, you turn on your live longer genes.
You do. It's and so we have these built in pathways that are turned off when we're constantly in a fed state. So it makes sense to go periods of time without food. Like biologically we're designed to do that. And I think there's so much untapped potential there, and it's a really hot area of focus and research, and it's going to be exciting to see where that heads moving forward.
Totally. Yeah. I totally believe in that. And I think the sauna and heat therapy also helps skin, like the improvement in your blood vessel elasticity and pliability improves a lot.
Absolutely.
So as we get older, we get these calcified hard vessels and not enough flow.
I'd also add in there too, like thinking about, so these are things that would enhance mitochondrial function, but what would be impairing mitochondrial function in the first place? What would be causing destruction of mitochondria or the dysfunction of mitochondria in the first place? Which, again, the dysfunction of mitochondria can lead to external complexion issues in terms of the skin. So some of those things are exposure to heavy metals that bioaccumulate in our soils and in our environments, and then they get stored in our tissue. That's stuff like lead and cadmium, arsenic, and aluminum, which... you know, are more pervasive than we think. And that's also why it's important to be able to sweat. We are actually more efficient at sweating out heavy metals than we are actually through the urine. So again,
so don't use deodorant.
Don't use antiperspirant deodorants that use aluminum that actually clog up those lymphatic ducts and the pores that you're trying to actually get those things out of the body. So what you put on your skin matters. Do you educate your patients
Yes.
Well, you have your own skincare line.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Is that right?
I do. I'm going to send you some. I really want you to try our vitamin C serum, which is amazing, and the hyaluronic acid serum, which you'll love.
Excited.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. So there's lots of factors.
I mean, lots of factors. I always worry every time I put on deodorant. I'm using some organic thing, but you know, you always think about these things. I love hot yoga because it makes me sweat so much.
I think
that's such an important thing, the stretching and flexibility too.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love hot yoga, and I think you can knock out so many things at one time with trying to get more into a parasympathetic meditative state. You're getting that more flexibility, but you're also developing strength. That proprioception, which when you get older, you lose your proprioception. You're at increased risk for fractures because you fall. So I think yoga is kind of that investment in the long term. And you're also perspiring and you're sweating and reconnecting with your breath. So I think there's so much in one that is amazing about yoga.
That is so true. Well, you're so wise for such a young person. And it's amazing that you're such a good chef too. I see you cooking and doing stuff. Like I don't even find time to do all that. So
I didn't
I'm
used
so
to
impressed.
Be a good cook. So
let alone go to med school on top of all that.
Yeah, you kind of find a way. And what I've learned is, you know, just trying to live by example. And so just knowing that our medicine really works, but again, making lifestyle changes is probably the hardest obstacle for a lot of people. So you could talk about it, you could preach it, you could educate people, but not everybody's going to follow it. And so I was like, you know what better way than just lead by example? And then how can I inspire other people? Because I know that's going to be one of the biggest obstacles is that you may have a treatment plan, you may have it all figured out, but if you can't actually implement the protocol because the patient isn't willing to abide by whatever you've come up with, well, that's an issue. So
that's so true. That inspirational and aspirational, showing people what's possible and helping them strive for it. That's so important.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. Well, congratulations on putting together such an amazing Instagram, and all the content is terrific. And
thank you.
I know how hard it is to generate good content and do Instagram every day. Yeah. So I'm really impressed.
Thank you.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
How many hours a day do you think you spend on Instagram?
Well, I can tell you, in a week, I used to spend about 35 hours.
Yeah.
And so
it's a lot. Yeah,
different days vary, and I'll repost content sometimes just to make it easier on myself. And so right now I say I'll probably have like 2 new posts a week, and then I'm reposting maybe another 3. And that's just where I'm at right now. I was putting out new content every day, 6 days a week at, you know, the last year, and it's paid off because I've been able to grow so rapidly, but just recognizing my limitations too, and also still catering to myself, making sure that, you know, I'm showing up for school and I'm getting the most out of school, but also taking care of me, since it, you know, started as a creative habit. So, you know, I have found though that, you know, it is something that I enjoy doing, and it's a great creative outlet for me, but if you really want something, and, you know, you'll find a way to make it work. So.
Well, it's such an interesting topic, and I think you're definitely like going to be one of those leaders in the future. So keep up the good work, and come visit me when you're in LA. Let's talk longevity.
Let's
do Botox.
Let's do okay. it. Yeah, I.
It's a deal.
I'll definitely let you know next time I'm down there.
That sounds so good. Well, stay in touch. And everybody who's listening, where can they find you on your various venues?
Yeah. So I hang out most on Instagram. So functional.foods on Instagram. You can also check out my website, eatfunctionalfoods.org. And I'm also on Facebook, Eat Functional Foods. And it's basically the same content I generate on Instagram. But for those that are more familiar with the Facebook format, you can find me there as well. And you know, in the new year, my goal is to start kind of generating more video content too, getting onto YouTube, and trying to and branch out in that direction too, and see where I can really take this. So, yeah.
Well, that's amazing. You guys definitely should go read, follow, learn, and be inspired like I am. That's it for now. Eat healthy, stay healthy, stay beautiful. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram at Beauty by Dr. K, DRKAY, doing amazing things with people's faces. And my website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where my awesome skincare line is. Tyler, I'm going to send you some. Yeah, right. I hope you love it. We'll stay happy, healthy, and beautiful.